Barbara, do you want? So, welcome to Women Explore, our lecture and discussion forum. This is our 2022 spring series called Friendship, Distraction, and Hardiness: The Complexity of This Moment. So, in this moment, please look around you and see if there are noises that could interrupt us, whether they're bells or beeps or microwaves or whatever. And mostly we will ask you to be muted when somebody is speaking, but sometimes we'll enter into more of a discussion and then it's not so easy to remember that or do that. So just please be aware of only receiving information from our group during this time, not from that little screen that keeps buzzing and ringing in your pocket or wherever it is. So we try to create programs that are thoughtful, original, and provocative, and try to encourage discussions with open minds and open hearts, and discussions and topics that we can stretch from and we can explore and learn and maybe change, maybe take some new steps in our lives that make things better and make the world better. So that's what we are here for. And our topic maybe bears a little description. We're talking about friendship, distraction, and hardiness. And what we imagined as we planned this was that friendship is a part of hardiness. The stronger our friendships are, and the more friendships we can tend and take care of, the more hardy we are. And distraction can keep us from tending and strengthening those friendships, or from strengthening our hardiness. If part of our hardiness is how we take care of our health, and then we're distracted by all kinds of things that we're all tempted by, then we don't have as much time to take care of our physical health, emotional health, mental health, spiritual health. And then friendship can fill in some of the places where we're not so hardy. We might be vulnerable. We might feel like we're not so strong. And then we can turn to a friend and other resources that we have, but turn to friends and fill in some of those gaps. And then sometimes, in this complexity of this, distraction can be a fun way to spend time with a friend or a fun way to spend time with yourself. And so there can be something positive about distraction. And then hardiness, we need hardiness to meet these very challenging times so that we can take care of ourselves and we can also help each other and help our neighbors and be able to contribute in that way. So our 10 weeks is devoted to exploring the relationship between all of these. So in that interest, our couplet this time is about what we own, how much we own, why we own it, what it means to own it. And so our topic for today is driving the climate crisis, colon, to buy or not to buy. That is the question. And our focuser for this topic is Barbara Landry. Barbara began her career working for Shawmut Bank, first in operations and then in human resources, handling employee communications and activities. Shawmut awarded Barbara a scholarship to Simmons College to attend a specially designed undergraduate management program sponsored by the National Association of Banking Women. She continued at Simmons, earning her master's degree in communications management. Barbara moved to academia when she became assistant director of her graduate program at Simmons College. From there, she became chair of the communication programs at Hester College in Manchester, New Hampshire, where she developed and managed a program in radio and television broadcasting and a program in public relations. Her home and her garden have been her salvation during the pandemic, where she has quarantined with her husband and her pet poodle. What's your pet poodle's name?
Coco.
Coco. Her pet poodle, Coco. So
And
let's
she's
welcome.
been banned from the premises for the moment.
Oh, okay. No Coco interferences, huh? Okay. So welcome, Barbara. We're wanting to hear your focus.
And I'm hoping you can hear it. I'm sitting a little farther away from the microphone. Is my audio level okay?
Yes.
Thank you. Okay. I'm here to tell you that children can inherit their mother's DNA, but they can also inherit their buying habits. My maternal grandparents owned a jewelry store on Main Street. This was before the advent of malls, when the town still shopped on one thoroughfare. My mom and Aunt Eleanor both worked in their father's jewelry store. On their lunch break, they walked up the street to see what other stores were featuring in their windows and their showroom. They knew in any given season what every piece of merchandise was up the street, and they were on a first name basis with everybody who sold it. They were excellent consumers. The store, as it was referred to in our family, was the focus of most of our family's life. I was allowed in the front of the store if I was properly dressed, and I learned that very early. It was a rule. And so when I would come up the couple of blocks from the skating rink dressed in tights and a skating skirt, looked cute, but not appropriate for the store. I had to go to the back. And there was a pool hall down the street that had the most wonderful special hot dogs. And they'd get me a hot dog after I'd skated, and I'm on the back because I know I can't be in the front when customers come in because there is a certain they need to see what they're used to seeing, which isn't me anyway. As a little girl, I also was allowed to go to the open house. Christmas, we were a Jewish family that celebrated Christmas because that's where the family made its money, and we wanted to fit in with the community. And so the store had an open house every and I would be dressed to the nines in this, really fancy dress, maybe with a tiara, and I was sort of part of the presentation. And I knew, always knew, I had to be on my best behavior. So that was the store's fitting into molding my shopping pattern. As a little girl, I loved to wander in my mom's closet. Unlike, I guess, other little girls, I would never have dared to try on any of my mother's clothes. But I could go and try on her jewelry, and I did that many times. When I was at my grandparents' house, I got a chance to look through lots and lots of fashion magazines. My grandmother had stopped dressing up long ago, but she still loved the bizarre and the glamour and the Vogue, and those were always there, and I was always thumbing through them. My grandmother's mobility was limited, and so she shopped through catalogs. And so all the catalogs were also there for me to thumb through, including all of the jewelry catalogs for the store. And when the catalogs were replaced by something new, I had my sharp scissors, and I was allowed to cut out all of this jewelry that I thought was pretty. And that was something I absolutely loved to do. And I think it really was part of developing my style and my taste of who I was going to be as I got older. I also loved to play with paper dolls. I don't know how many of you had paper dolls growing up, but they had outfits, which maybe you also cut out, that had little tabs and you stuck them on these little dolls. And that was something I really enjoyed playing with. My family bought me dolls, and I was never into dolls. And then my mother, in desperation for whatever reason, bought me storybook dolls. And I had these beautiful, fancy dolls in fancy costumes that were stuck way up above my closet that only came down if somebody new came to the house and I needed to show them. I just didn't play with dolls. It wasn't my thing. But I loved anything that had to do with style. So anyway, all of this grooming, popular word these days, was really having me set up to develop the overpack closets that every other woman in my family had. I thought that was what young women did. When I was 11, my dad died just before Christmas. And since we celebrated Christmas, that was a Christmas of total excess. I think the family just was feeling badly for my brother and myself, and they just wanted to make sure we had this spectacular Christmas. But for some reason, I mean, I remember that Christmas for a lot of reasons, but I also remember it for the excess. One of the things, our family really did not talk about emotion much. My mother and my aunt saw their mother go through two nervous breakdowns. And so to deal, you know, I think they had seen enough emotion through that. So dealing with any more emotion, they'd had their total for their life. They weren't going to deal with anymore. And my grandmother, one of the things that she did always do, because I think she learned it in her family, was she was a big gift giver. And my mother developed this into a fine art. It was really the only way she had ever learned to show love. And so that was sort of what I was left with. When I was 19, I was hired for my first job, which was at AT&T as a toll operator, placing calls on one of those huge boards you've seen in old movies with the plugs that you plug in. And I went out and bought 5 identical wool knit sheets, matching cardigans in different colors, and of course with matching jewelry. I felt like I was coming into my own. I knew they were a solid beginning of a professional wardrobe. And when, about a year later, I packed to go to school in Boston to train as a court reporter, those outfits came with me, along with a number of the rest of the things in my closet. The school, which didn't have dorms, recommended that I live at the Franklin Square House in Roxbury. This was sight unseen. When I arrived, they put me in this long, tiny room, which just about had room for a single bed and all of the clothes that I had packed and brought with me. And did I mention that they had a 9:30 curfew that they never told me about? So within 3 days, I had discovered that the YMCA had just built a brand new facility the other side of Berkeley Street, and they were willing to rent me a room there. And did I mention they didn't have a curfew? And so that was the beginning of this wonderful life that I came to love in Boston. Within a few months of arriving in Boston, I went to work for Chomet Bank. I was still going to school. And I started to shop at Filene. I bought a couple of suits that I love to this day, even though they have long ago exited my closet. I can remember seeing these suits on the rack. I can remember how I felt about seeing them. They were this beautiful, it was spring, and they were these spring colors, had these gorgeous buttons, and this beautiful mix of colors and some twills, and they were made to stay in a wardrobe for a long, long time. Traditionally, while I worked at Chomet, I would go up the street, just like my mother and my aunt did, a couple of times a week to check out, you know, what the new merchandise was in the stores. And the other thing that I did that I had learned from my family, this whole idea of gifting, is for every occasion and every Christmas, I went out and very seriously, very methodically looked for the perfect gift that I thought I eventually found and mailed all the way back to Montana for the family. A few months after arriving in Boston, my mom came to visit. She took a quick look at Boston and then put us on a train to go to her very favorite place, which was Manhattan. We stayed a couple of blocks up from the Broadway Deli, on Broadway, near the Stage Deli. In 8 days, we saw 11 plays, We visited every major department store, and there were many more department stores then than there were now. And occasionally we remembered to eat. We ended up at Saks on Fifth Avenue, a place I had never been. And we're wandering on the main floor, and I saw this beautiful Gucci print that was a turban. Now, did I wear hats? Did I mention? No, I grew up in the time of gloves and hats, but I never really did a whole lot of the hats. But mother bought me this turban, which stayed in my closet way too long. Did I ever wear it? No. Did I try it on a lot? Oh, yeah. And what I remembered was this very special experience, and I can remember that to this day, of finding it. And mother saying, well, if we want this, we will simply buy it. And it was just this wonderful, wonderful experience. Everything about being there at that moment and making that purchase was special. This trip marked the beginning of my connection with my mother that was based on our shopping together. Prior to this, we had not had a particularly good relationship. Over the years, there were more trips to Manhattan, where we saw lots of plays and shopped. When I would come home, there were fewer opportunities to go to plays, but we, at that time, still had a fair number of pretty decent stores, and we would shop. So by the time, you know, I went home, I was packing a whole lot more than I had when I had come out. Mother enjoyed buying for me, and did I know at some point that this was excess? Yeah, actually I did, but was I going to stop it? Because she got so much joy out of doing it, and it was a way that I, in all practical senses, knew that she loved me, we just kept doing it. My husband on these trips, I should mention, is good at electronics in building, and he would always, at the end of our visit, tell mom to develop a list for the next time that we got home. Usually what this included was buying major purchases. Sometimes it was building something major, but something like a TV or a washing machine. So he was developing his own ritual with mom surrounding buying things. She was happy. He was happy. We were happy. Occasionally, when I was in Boston, I would be sent on a shopping excursion that was a bit of a challenge. Mom enjoyed decorating her home for Christmas. Did I mention that was a bit of excess as well? Every room had its own Christmas theme. If you are familiar with Department 54, you know they manufacture a variety of Christmas villages. Every so often they come out with a new theme. They created one focused on Manhattan, and mother was excited. So I get this call, and she says, okay, you got to find this for me. And that meant doing it now, because these items, they didn't make a lot of them, and so they got purchased fairly quickly. Had to call the company, had to figure out who they were selling to, had to call the place here or multiple places, and they rarely would hold these for you, which meant then getting in the car and driving to Boston or somewhere near, buying this thing, getting it home, and then getting it in the mail and sending it to mother. You know there had to be 12 or 14 pieces in here, so we did this for 12 or 14 years, every year, and she was happy. And if she was happy, I was happy. I should just throw in here that I did not really, because I didn't go home every Christmas, I did not understand just how much she bought until after she died. And I was going through the house and packing a fair amount to come back here. Every nook and cranny, every place I looked, every extra container in the garage that I opened, there were all of these Christmas decorations getting ready to fall out at me. I had no idea that she had this many. You know, the couple of times I went home at Christmas, I was just amazed at how beautiful every room was. She had worked in a store where you displayed merchandise, and I think she'd gotten a knack of doing this and a love for doing this. And then she had a room of theirs, and I've got on tape this interview that the TV station did because she decorated them for the occasion. And they came to the house and did an interview with her filled with bears that were decorated for Christmas. What can I tell you? And she wanted, and I know what else I can tell you. She wanted me to develop this love. And at some point in time, she sent me a Christmas village. Not the one that I went all over Boston looking for, which I discovered this Christmas when umpteen years later I thought, okay, on Christmas Eve I was going to set this up, which I did. And I got it put away, I don't know, 2 weeks ago. Am I ever going to do that again? Probably not. I mean, it takes a certain knack to love to do this, you know, and for people to come in, for people who love to do it and admire it, that's wonderful. But you cannot manufacture that. And at this point in time, I don't think I could even manufacture excitement over going out and buying. I've done that. So the few times that we were home for Christmas, Mom and I always went to the after Christmas sale, which included this wonderful florist. It had a huge showroom. I mean, people in Montana, or at least in Great Falls, decorated for Christmas. And did I mention this was a really good after Christmas sale? And so we would fill the car, you know, when we would come home. I have a light upstairs, a huge light. Well, that they actually sent. We didn't have, there's a whole story to that too, but it came from Montana from the sale. And I would buy, you know, for friends, for family, for colleagues at this sale when I would be home. Did I understand her excess in purchasing? No, but, you know, in retrospect, I understand that that was a model for what I ended up doing. So my husband worked for digital, and he had user conferences. And so I sometimes accompanied him because it was sort of a cheap vacation. And I followed him to Anaheim, and we had all this extra time. So after that, we wandered California, and we visited some relatives, and we ended up in Mexico. And it was his idea to park on the U.S. side, and for us, we were younger, to walk across the border to Mexico, where we spent the day. He loved to barter. I'm not really fond of bartering, but he was doing really well at it. We are coming back across the border, and there were people selling to the cars. And I'm like, oh, that, I like that. And I was so loaded down. There was no, I couldn't have carried anything else. I was dropping things along the way. We had to keep picking up. And I get across the border and we load up this car. And I'm saying, I am never doing that again. Very fond of my purchases, but it was a very strange experience. We now pack this because we are doing an extended vacation, and we are going to Montana for Christmas. So we arrive with full luggage, and we still have these Christmas sales to go to after Christmas. So we do that, and Mother finds this great big mirror that she insists I need to have. And I'm like, how am I ever going to get this home? She says, they'll take it on the plane. We'll just pack it, you know, they'll pack it here, we'll be fine. I get to this airport after having probably been off of work and away for, I'll bet, 4 weeks. I am in line. Larry is doing something with the car. I have 11 pieces of luggage, boxes, a mirror to ship to Logan. And you know, for a lot of my life, I had been fairly naive. I wasn't particularly paying any attention. I was focused on the task at hand. And I get up to the Delta representative, and I'm saying, and I've got 11 pieces. And he looks at me, and he says, you what? And I said, well, you know, I've got to ship these. We've been shopping. And he looks at me. He shipped them. He packed them and he shipped them. He did not charge us. This was back in the late 70s, maybe. And he looked at me and he said, don't you ever do this again. We get to Logan and Larry rents a car. He's coming around and I'm standing there with the stuff And he's selling the car. He's got the car sold. And guess what? There's no room for me. And I'm like, fine, whatever, I'll figure it out. And he's decided he wasn't going to leave without me. So he repacks things. And, you know, Logan wasn't as busy back then as it is now, but it was busy. And he stuffs me into a corner. I mean, I just about had room to breathe. And we got home and we unpacked and the mirror arrived unbroken and it made for a great story. But was it excess? Oh, it absolutely was. Would I do that again? Yes, probably not. Anyway, how am I doing for time? Just wanted to share, just in case you don't remember, in 1995, with the help of our gas company, our house exploded. And everything was declared a loss, even though the fire didn't last very long. It was a very hot fire. And the fire marshal said that even though a piece of clothing looked wearable, we could wear it and it could just turn to threads while we were wearing it. Our insurance agent told us to make a list of everything in the house and what we paid for it. I swear that is what he said. I spent days in the smoke-infested house making the list that we were told we needed. We delivered the list just before I had to go back and start my semester at college. And the insurance agent said, oh, no, we need replacement costs. And we had to go back through the list of everything, you know, that we bought in 25 years. And that told me a lot about our buying habits, about what, in fact, we purchased. But we did do that. And that was sort of an awakening. Our insurance claim representative brought his supervisors into our house because he wanted to show them our closets. And that was the beginning that I realized that we were doing something that was different from a lot of other people they insured. My guess is they weren't used to seeing closets that were this stuffed with things. These are the closets I grew up with because they were the closets my aunt and my mother and my grandmother all had. But it gave me something to think about, as did when we finally got through this whole process and bought a different house, and I had to go mostly to Bed Bath & Beyond and purchase everything for a new kitchen and towels, linen, sheets, everything for the beds in the bath. And guess what? I wasn't having fun. Having to purchase that all at once was overwhelming. All of the enjoyment I had gotten over the years of purchasing this stuff went away when I there was pressure to do it all at one time. Which also gave me something to think about. But that was a chore. It wasn't pleasurable. So we moved into a new house, bigger house, more closets, and guess what? All of those closets are now full. So this learning experience wasn't enough to change my purchasing habits, because obviously I've done the same thing. And the other thing that I perhaps have problems with, or at least never learned growing up, was how you call a closet, how you actually throw things away. And it's not that I don't, you know, I have major visits at this point, I think it's the Savers and the Epilepsy Foundation that I take maybe 3 times a year, but it's just not enough to solve the problem. During the pandemic, I have stayed very close to home, and I have been living in a couple of t-shirts, a couple of sweatshirts, a couple of pair of jeans, a couple of pair of shoes, and that's what I've been living in, and these closets have pretty much gone untouched because I don't go anywhere and I haven't had the need to shop. And it's made me really think about, you know, my whole history of purchasing. And, you know, traditionally, whether I needed something or not, I went to take a look to see what was on the floor, what was being stocked, to see what the new fashions were. And I still love to do that. And once in a while, I still do get out and doing it. And the last time, I think it was at Talbot's, I'm looking, I'm like, oh, well, if I go looking, I've got that in my closet. And no, I bought that some time ago. That's there somewhere. And I'm doing really very, very little purchasing. My sense is that I probably don't ever have to go shopping again in my lifetime. Okay. So I've come to understand that the world's larger survival issues, including sourcing raw materials and the pollution that comes from manufacturing and our excess consumerism, I have come to believe that our economic paradigm is wrong, and I do believe that. The fact that all the companies need to constantly have this growth and show this profit means that we have to keep buying, or they have to keep producing more and more and more, and there needs to be more and more of us. And I don't think that is a solution to the problems that we've developed. I just don't think it's a sustainable model for the future. As much as I have enjoyed my career as a shopper, I'm not interested in sustaining this kind of consumerism. And this was a lesson learned the hard way. But shopping did allow me to develop a relationship with my mom that I don't think would have existed without it, strange though that may sound. And, you know, if she were alive today, and she did a lot of reading, and she stayed you know, on top of the current issues. I would be very, very surprised if she were here today, if she could have literally stopped what she had learned to do all her life, and what that meant to her. It was just a way of her expressing herself. And it's an interesting thing for me to think about, and I don't really have an answer. So that is my consumerism, for whatever it's worth. Thank you.
Thank you, Barbara. Thank you for your story and your honesty and all that you just shared. And that lovely phrase, my career as a shopper. Yeah. Well, okay. So you've kicked us off into our to buy or not to buy. That is the question. And from the personal angle, and now we want to invite Elizabeth Cohen.